Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts, Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome back for another episode of the Blitz Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Gallo, and of course, I'm joined by my co-host and partner in crime, Harley Schultz. Harley, how are you doing?
Well, it's been a long week. I guess that's the easiest way to put it. It feels like 2020 as a whole has been about a decade in length. Well, this last 7 days feel like it's been at least 2.5 of those years.
It does. I know that. It does. It's the year that will never end. The week that's happened feels like it's been, like you said, 2.5 years, 6 months, whatever you want to call it. Just, it's hard to believe that the election was basically a week ago tomorrow, right? We're recording on Monday night. I always forget to point that out. The other thing I want to do is I want to pass along condolences to you and your wife, because as you told me before we started recording, heard that you lost your cat. Really sorry. I know that it's tough that anytime anybody loses a pet that's part of a family. So,
well, thank you, Steve. I've had, we currently have three. Oh, we have two cats now. Logan was our eldest cat. I'd had him since 2005 when I moved back to the Twin Cities from Los Angeles. And I was very fortunate at the time. When I left California, I had broken up with someone that I'd been with for several years, and I was not able to take the pets that I had when we were together home with me. So one of my closest friends here, his parents were, one had just passed away, and the other one was to the point in her life where she could no longer keep the cat. So he offered to give him to us, or me at the time. And so I've had Logan since late or early 2005, and he's certainly been with me for a long time, and he was a good friend of mine, stayed by my side up until the very end, but he finally gave in to kidney failure this past week. We brought him to the vet on Wednesday, got the word on Friday night. Actually, while I was working a high school football game, got the word that he was going to be incurable of his current issues, so we brought him home that night, drove to the after hours vet at 10 p.m. after the football game, picked up Logan, brought him home so we could spend the final night with him here at the house, and then had him put to sleep the Saturday morning.
That's tough. I mean, we had to do it once, and then I did, and just I'd never had to do that with an animal before, and it's like it's something that's just not easy to do. It's like, you know, you're doing it for their best, but it's so difficult. So, I mean, my heart pours for you, man. It does. It goes out to you,
like,
guys.
It's one of those things that you, until you've had to do it. And I mean, obviously many people have lost family members. So I don't mean to lighten dealing with the loss of a pet versus a family member. But when you have had a pet for such a long time, that pet becomes a family member. Yep. So If you can understand and feel the pain of losing a significant other, a mother, a father, a child, it's very much the same sort of hurt and anguish you feel when you lose a pet.
Yeah, there's a hole in your heart. You're missing something. I mean, look, my wife and I don't have children, and you know, if you don't have pets, maybe you can't relate to it, but I'm not saying that there are kids, but yeah, there's a hole left when one of them passes away. You know, you're used to them being someplace where they're not. Just like, you know, you hear people say, well, somebody doesn't have somebody at the dinner table now because they lost them, you know, to the virus or something like that. It's still the same thing. You lost something that you love. So whatever we can do to help you out during this time, by all means, reach out.
Well, on a fortunate note, had a fairly good week from a DFS standpoint.
That'll help. That'll help. Money always helps a little bit, right? Put a little smile on your
face. Exactly.
So there, you know, this week there was quite a few COVID cases and players that went on and off the list, and you know, people that had to have close contact tracing and couldn't be, you know, practicing and stuff like that. I don't know. And it's like, look, we went over 10 million cases now. We're over 1,000 deaths per day, I think, for the past 5 days. We've been averaging well over 100,000 cases. I'm still worried about the rest of the season.
Yeah, and the league talked a little bit about today in terms of some plans, whatnot, if they need to add a week 18 or if they need to expand the playoffs or come up with some sort of bubble environment for the playoffs. All those things are certainly still talking points going forward. Nothing has been chosen for certain. But I really have to question now. Again, it's a Thursday night game, so they could have done something with it. But last week, all of the issues between the Packers and the 49ers, obviously the 49ers were more related to COVID. The Packers had a couple of their running backs because of COVID. It just seemed ridiculous that they didn't at least make the effort to push it forward a couple days.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I mean, look, I get it, the advertising dollars and the contract and all that stuff, but at some point you just have to be able to say what's right, what's the right thing to do, not what's the right financial thing to do. But I will say this. You said they may add an extra week. Most years, I think most people would agree, more fantasy equals better fantasy. Man, this year, I got to tell you, I wouldn't be very upset if the season ended next week with how rough it's been due to injuries and stuff like that.
Well, that's the case, but let's put it this way. There's probably $3 or $4 million on the line over Daily Fantasy tonight in showdown slates with this horrid matchup between the New York Jets and the New England Patriots. You know, I tried to put together a couple of lineups for today, and I'm sitting there with like $10,000 still that I haven't spent because there's no one that I want that's priced over $5,000 in some of these.
Yeah, that's, I know, it is crazy. I actually think Cam Newton has a big day today. I hope he does because he's a key cog for my Scott Fishbowl team. So I hope we see him get back on it. And I'll tell you what, before we move any further into the day, I think that what we have to do is I need to throw it over to Harley Schultz for this week's Blitzed Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. Kyle Allen suffered a season-ending ankle injury Sunday in Washington's loss to the New York Giants. Alex Smith stepped in and threw for more than 300 yards, but he also threw three interceptions. Smith, of course, is only a few games removed from his own major leg injury, one that was complicated by the Washington football team's piss-poor medical team. I don't know about you, but if I was Ellen, I would look to get my treatment anywhere but there. Well, anywhere but there, and wherever the Chargers team witch doctor is working. Christian McCaffrey injured his shoulder Sunday in his return from an ankle injury. His status for next week is now in question. Of course, if you were stupid enough to drop Mike Davis this past week during the insanity that is 2020, you deserve this bad karma. With Kenyon Drake still dealing with an ankle injury, Chase Edmonds posted an uninspiring 88 scoreless total yards on 28 touches, or what most people in the fantasy industry like to call the double Drake. Speaking of uninspiring running backs, both David Montgomery and David Johnson sustained concussions in their respective games Sunday. They can now join all of their fantasy owners in dealing with the weekly migraine caused by their play. And finally, Josh Lambeau is out for the year after suffering an injury to his gluteus muscle on an onside kick attempt. We asked him about the injury following the game, and he said the news that he would be out for the rest of the year really kicked him in the... This has been your BPN News Update.
Man, I give you that. That was a good one. That might have been your best ever, especially from a transition out. Wow. That... Some things just write theirself, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so what?
How do you injure your butt on a kick?
Fun fact: do you know what the largest muscle in the human body is?
The skin.
It is the gluteus maximus.
I thought the skin was the largest muscle in the human body.
No, I don't know that the skin is technically a muscle.
The skin's an organ, so it's the largest organ.
Correct. There you go. There you go. Two random facts that you might get to use during Trivial Pursuit someday. Actually, you know what? I can't believe we didn't. Wow. Man, sometimes getting old stinks. So before the show, Harley and I talk for a few minutes to say, okay, hey, what do you want to do with the segments, right? We don't talk about our DFS stuff because we keep that to ourselves under lock and key. And we're like, man, I don't know. And then we came up with an idea. How we did not have some sort of tribute to the unfortunate passing of Alex Trebek and do a Jeopardy segment blows my mind right now.
You know, I think that we just kind of overlooked it because none of us want to admit that he's gone.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, 2020 really can F off.
It's been so ridiculous. I mean, the it started in January with the loss of personal musical hero Neil Peart of the band Rush for me. And now going, I said, up until this past weekend, losing my cat. Alex Trebek obviously passing certainly is a huge, huge blow. And Trebek has always been hugely involved not only in the world that he's currently in the game show world, but he's also made public appearances in the music world, in the television and motion picture world, and also in the sports world.
Yeah. So not to damper the spirit any, and I didn't say this earlier, but when we're sitting here talking about bad things in 2020, I can't help but add that, you know, my mother-in-law lives with us. We helped take care of her. She was diagnosed with breast cancer. I want to say last week, maybe Thursday-ish, something like that. Maybe it was Wednesday. For the third time.
I didn't realize it was possible to have it that many times.
Yes. She had it once, had it treated, I believe. It went away. She got through it, right? Had the chemo and all that stuff. It was pretty tough the very first time, but she beat it. Second time was, I want to say, I think it was 10 years later. And she got it, and this time they had to do a mastectomy. And now we're, I think, 5 years post that, and they found something. Luckily, my wife went to her last appointment with her. They're actually optimistic that they're going to be able to treat it with some medicine and not have to be very aggressive with it, and then they could do a little lumpectomy if they need to. Fingers crossed, but three times. So fingers crossed that she beats it for a third time.
Well, thanks to all the advances in medicine, certainly our prayers and hopes are with your family as well, then, that she feels better. Well,
thank you. Speaking of medicine, you know, there are a lot of injuries that used to be the death knell for a professional athlete. Liz Frank injuries, ACLs, right? And because of that, because of the chance of things like that happening, we're going to have this be one of our segments tonight. Let's go back, right, to draft time. And talk about backs that maybe we should have or shouldn't have been looking to handcuff. And does that play going into next year when you have a league? What and who should people be looking to handcuff? And I'm not so much talking about the result of it this year, right? But it's who should you and shouldn't you be looking to handcuff? And who? Like, do you, if you draft Zeke in the first round, do you look to draft Tony Pollard? Or do you say, I like Alexander Mattison, so I'm not going to draft my handcuff, but somebody else's handcuff?
Well, I think that strategy was really useful this past season because teams were afraid that if their starting running back, a la, say, Green Bay's situation last week and came down with COVID, that there was a high likelihood that his subordinate running backs may also catch COVID and be out that particular weekend. We saw that with the wide receiver group in San Francisco and the running back room for Green Bay in the Thursday night game. But I think that next season, assuming that things are back to a certain degree of normal, we should see more of the desire, I think, to identify which teams have a backup running back that you would feel comfortable starting if your starting running back was to go down. I mean, you could look at the top end. Like, let's look at the top four running backs drafted, top five running backs drafted in most drafts this year, those being Alvin Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, Delvin Cook, and Christian McCaffrey. Now, coming into the season, we had no reason to believe that Mike Davis was going to be anything other than a bench player for the Carolina Panthers, probably a special teamer. And realistically, people probably thought that a guy like Reggie Bonifon was going to be the true handcuff to McCaffrey. In the case of Saquon Barkley, we had no faith and no desire whatsoever to roster Wayne Gallman or Deion Lewis. And obviously at the time of the draft, Devonta Freeman wasn't on their roster.
Yep.
When you look at a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, we did have some data showing that Tony Pollard was a capable running back filling in for him. He looked good. Obviously, no one could have expected the offensive line woes as well as the quarterback woes that Dallas has had to suffer through this season. But Pollard is a great example of one of the guys that we could have at least looked at and identified and said, okay, yeah, if you're going to have Zeke, you're going to need Pollard. Same with Kamara. If you had Kamara, and obviously he hasn't had a lot of injury issues himself in recent years, but Latavius Murray is a fully capable guy to step in there and be effective, and he's shown in the past he's been effective. So obviously having him around would have been a good thing. And in the case of Delvin Cook, we saw small sample size last year. Alexander Mattison and Mike Boone both filling in for him down the stretch, and they both looked very, very good. So I could see identifying one of those two as a handcuff for him at the start of the draft this year. But again, it's really hard to tell because some of those guys, it's like you're taking them with the first overall pick, second overall pick. You want to have some sort of safety valve for them.
So you nailed, and I was going to interrupt you and I decided not to. My favorite handcuff of the ones you mentioned is a guy like Latavius Murray. And the reason for that is he has standalone value, right? You can use him as a flex. You know he has a role. He's been successful in the past. You know he has a role. And if something happens, the role will expand, even if he doesn't get it all.
Yes.
That also leads me to say that's why I like Tony Pollard as a handcuff. I own Tony Pollard in a league where I don't have Zeke. And it was because I figured he's had involvement in the offense. And Zeke actually had COVID prior to the year starting. And we weren't sure how that would work out long term, right? Was that going to affect him or not? So... And even like Madison, he's a guy that got the flash and show you. And if something happened to Cook, he didn't have as much of a history showing true involvement in the offense. So that one's a little riskier. But Murray and even Pollard, because Pollard had some solid snaps and carries at the end of last year. I want to say the second half of last year. They're my favorite kind to handcuff. Finding the handcuff to Joe Mixon, that doesn't really do much for me, I don't think.
Well, in the case of Joe Mixon, I think everyone knows that Gio Bernard is the second in command there. And Gio Bernard actually had a couple of seasons where he was the featured back in Cincinnati. And even in those seasons, other than that, he'd always been a bit of a point per reception kind of thief guy.
Yes.
So there was a little bit of value with him. But again, yeah, he's not a guy you are targeting frequently unless you happen to have Mixon on your roster.
And I should not have used Mixon as an excuse, because even Gio kind of fits the mold of what I want to see, a guy that can be used in the pass catching game so that he's got some value. What I meant was, because I look at Gio as a guy who's their change of pace back. I didn't see, and honestly, I owned Mixon and I had Gio in a league only because I needed some bench depth, and I knew that Gio offered that from a catch standpoint. I didn't expect him to be the one that would step in to take the role over when Mixon got hurt, though.
Yeah, I think that there's certain players that it is kind of questionable on that end. A good example might be the whole issue in Arizona with Kenyon Drake versus Chase Edmonds.
Right.
I think coming into the season, there were a lot of people that were excited to see what Kenyon Drake would do in a not Adam Gase offense for an entire season as a featured back, as he showed very, very good down the stretch last year. But there are also still a bunch of anti-Drake truthers that sat and dealt with him the entire time that he was under Gase's thumb and basically were like, oh, we can't trust this guy at all. Chase Edmonds is going to be a future star. And so you can look at guys like that as guys that you would pick up as handcuffs in the draft only because there's at least some hype around them. I like to think like San Diego, Las Vegas, drink. Los Angeles Chargers are the same situation. I mean, we watched over the last couple of years as Melvin Gordon split carries with Austin Eckler, despite the fact that both of them, when they were in there, were producing fantasy-relevant lines. You mentioned Latavius Murray, kind of that same boat.
Yep.
Guys were – the handcuff is also startable, at least on a flex basis, on a week-to-week basis.
Yep. The other point that you hit on without realizing you probably hit on it was, I'm also not going to target handcuffs for teams that are probably going to struggle for the most part, i.e. the Jets, right? If I drafted Le'Veon Bell, if I drafted Le'Veon Bell and Bell goes out, I'm sorry, I don't know that their backup's going to have – no offense to Frank Gore, right? But I don't know that.
Yep.
Was it LaMichael Perrine or something like that?
Yep.
Et cetera. And Kalen Ballage was there for a little bit too, believe it or not. I don't know that I have the faith that they can step into that role and be productive when I'm expecting it to be a challenged offense already anyway.
Yeah, and I think that actually kind of it burnt a couple people this year because you have a situation like Jacksonville where – people went into their drafts depending on when your draft was. You may have taken Leonard Fournette as your running back two or running back three, and obviously they cut him. But then, I mean, everyone was like, okay, it's going to be Reichwell Armstead. Okay, it's going to be Divine Azigbo. And out of nowhere comes James Robinson, and he's going to be a league winner for a lot of leagues. And he was a guy that really went undrafted on draft day.
So the other thing that hurt this year was having no preseason.
Well, definitely.
You know, you didn't get to see those kind of guys that would have been highlighted, that would have been easier to see what they did in preseason games and stuff like that.
Well, and what's amazing about that is the weight and the success level of rookie wide receivers this season. Typically, wide receivers and tight ends, for that matter, struggle in their first year or two because of the fact that they need to be comfortable with both the speed of the game in the NFL but also comfortable running routes and matching up with their particular quarterbacks. And if they don't get that opportunity in the preseason to play, there's really no way to replicate that truly in training camp. Now, obviously with running backs, it's a little bit easier because basically when you're a running back, you're told hold on to the ball and go to one of six holes.
Yes, and exactly. Another position, and they would probably take my IDP card if I didn't mention this, another position that's very similar to that, like the tight ends and the wide receivers, is defensive end. It usually takes the guys a couple to 3 years to get used to the speed of the game and understand it and you know, take advantage. They can't just win on athleticism, usually, in the NFL like they did in college.
Exactly. I mean, I think that from an IDP standpoint, at least, obviously, linebacker is probably – I mean, it's a tough position.
Yes.
In the NFL to play, but it's an easier position to replicate points from a fantasy standpoint because a guy that's in there whose primary job is to work the middle of the field and tackle people coming out of the backfield or short passes, they're going to get that opportunity no matter what. And I think that Minnesota is certainly showing that with the development of a guy like Eric Wilson, who hasn't really been on the radar for any other team until this year when he was forced into action due to injuries to Ben Gideon and Antonio and Anthony Barr.
Yep. So at the end of the day, I know this is a shorter segment, but next year when your draft rolls around, do not be afraid to handcuff, but don't handcuff for the sake of just handcuffing. You got to get good value, and it's got to make sense for why you're doing it. And there are times where you can get a guy like Latavius Murray, even if you don't own Alvin Kamara.
Yes, and I'd also like to add, though, too, much like I mentioned in the news today, if you have a handcuff that is performing very, very well in a substitute role, and then the regular player comes back, do not immediately drop the handcuff. Please, please don't, because this is what's going to happen. You're going to end up spending every single dollar of your free agent budget the following week to pick up the handcuff back because you should have just held on to him.
Yes, you can always drop a quarterback. There you go. How's that?
Exactly.
You can always drop a quarterback. Let me check. Let me see if anybody dropped Mike Davis in my Scott Fishbowl League. No, of course they did not. They did not. So no luck for me. All right. Are you ready to pad your financial winnings to start pushing forward towards the holidays?
Well, I'm sorry. What was that?
I said, are you ready to start padding your financial winnings as we move towards the holidays with some DFS stuff?
Well, exactly. Although it looks like my finances might be taking a hit very shortly anyways, as there's a good chance that, at least here in the state of Minnesota, that a lot of the bars and restaurants that I represent are going to be forced into a lockdown or a lowered shutdown in the next couple of days. So hopefully my finances don't take too much of a hit with that. But worst case scenario, that just gives me more time to strategize my Sunday lineups.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen for your case. I will say, people, I don't care what side of the fence you are on this. Don't argue. Just wear a mask because it helps.
Exactly.
That's all. Just wear a mask. That's not a political thing. It's been made political. If you think it doesn't work, then wear it thinking it doesn't work. Wear a mask so Harley can put some money in his pocket for Christmas. All right, so for the people that don't know, we are going to go into the DFS segment, give you our pay up, stay away, and value play at the four major positions. Harley and I do not discuss this prior. We are doing this recording on Monday while the Jets and the Patriots are playing, and it's a whopping 3-0, so we're not missing anything. I let Harley set the over-under, and let's see if I can guess it this week.
This week, we're bumping the over up to 7.
Man, you know what? When I was making my picks and after I was done, I said, I'm going over for anything above 5. Anything 5, I'm over. I got to take the over. 7 makes it tough, but I'm taking the over.
My main reasoning behind that is I think we're going to match on all three tight ends.
My reason for taking the over is I thought we would get a hot start out the gate.
And I actually think we might struggle at the quarterback position, so this could be interesting.
Yes, it will. Okay, so go ahead. Lead us off.
I'm going to pay up for the highest-priced quarterback on the docket this week, and that's Kyler Murray versus Buffalo. 8,000 on DraftKings, 8,800 on FanDuel. Kyler is what we all thought Lamar Jackson was going to be this year. He proved last week that he is truly matchup-proof, putting up a huge line in a game that I really didn't have a lot of faith in him in. And Buffalo, they actually have not faced a true running quarterback yet this year. Closest thing they saw to it was Patrick Mahomes, and he had like 26 yards against them, plus a touchdown on the ground. So, again, Buffalo's got a very, very good cornerback. But they're still giving up a lot of yards, a lot of passing touchdowns. I mean, Russell Wilson showed last week that he was capable of moving the ball successfully against them. I think Kyler's in for a decent day, too.
So we don't match. I don't hate it. I don't love it. Things that I have, here's something that I think he has going for him. They're coming off a loss, okay?
Yes.
Here's something they have going against them. They're on the road. Here's something they have going for them. They're on the road without many fans, but warm weather going to a cooler weather. But then again, it's been 70 on the East Coast this week, so who knows what he's going to get. At the end of the day, I like him. I didn't pick him. I decided to go just a tad cheaper for a guy.
Oh, by the way, the game is in Arizona. So.
Oh, crap. For some reason, I looked at it wrong, and my notes say I had it in Buffalo. So there you go. Forget what I said. He's at home coming off a loss. He's probably a solid play. But my payup is going to be a little bit cheaper. It's Aaron Rodgers at home against Jacksonville.
Well, okay. I don't think that there's too much argument here. I actually at one point had Aaron Rodgers listed as my pay-to-play, which is going to make this next comment all the more weird. I moved Aaron Rodgers from my pay-to-play to my stay-away for the week.
You know, that's usually something I do, not you. That's not like you. The over is in serious jeopardy at this point.
Yes. So in the case of Aaron Rodgers, his price is $7,900 on DraftKings, $8,400 on FanDuel, both up near the top financially. The big thing with Jacksonville, though, is they can't stop the run or the pass. So there's a good argument here that the Packers will be able to use their well-rested running back committee extensively this weekend. Plus, doing a little bit of pre-research here, it looks like a wintry mix with wind is scheduled for this weekend in upper Wisconsin. So weather could be a factor. Now, typically, Aaron Rodgers plays just fine in weather. So I'm not thinking that the weather is really going to affect Aaron Rodgers per se so much, but it could very well affect Jake Luton. And if that means that Jake Luton isn't able to keep Jacksonville competitive in the game, it's a very good likelihood that game script will flip to the point where Green Bay can run the ball more. And there might be a point when Aaron Rodgers gets taken out of the game to keep him safe.
Yeah, and you make a good point. This could be a game where you hear the announcers say somewhere in the early third that teams that have their running back carry the ball 20-plus times for 100-plus yards are blah, 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 right? Just like clockwork, that's what they'll say. But I get it, but I'll stand by my pay up. My stay away is a guy that seems to produce no matter what, but this week he is on the road. I just double-checked my notes. Although he is coming off of a loss, so, but he's facing a team that's given up the third fewest points to fantasy quarterbacks this year. I'm staying away from Mr. I'm in the MVP running Russell Wilson.
I seriously thought about that until I looked and saw the fact that he only has one game with fewer than three total touchdowns this year.
So the thing that pushed me over, just for what it's worth, the thing that pushed me over that, like I look at what they've done, you know, year to date against quarterbacks, they've had 2 weeks to prepare. That's what scares me the most about the matchup.
No, I totally agree. I did think about Russell Wilson. I looked at actually at the top 10 guys and I thought to myself, none of them I really hate this week. I was a little concerned about Justin Herbert traveling to Miami with their two good cornerbacks there. But again, we just saw Miami give up a huge game to Kyler Murray, and Herbert certainly is capable of running the ball too. He's shown over the last few weeks that he's both mobile on the ground as well as in the pocket, throwing the ball deep. There's some players that I might just kind of want to fade, but there really wasn't anyone up at the top that I just looked at and said, good God, I don't want to play this player this week.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, when we get to it, I did that at a different position. There was a different position that I was like, oh, I don't want to play any of these guys. I think we're going to match at our value play. I'll find it hard to believe if we don't.
I am going to play the player that I played as my value play last week, and that's Drew Lock at Las Vegas.
So last week we had a match with Lock, and I did look at Lock, but I decided to go with Tua Tagovailoa. I hate saying his name.
Didn't we decide there was like a silent Q put in there somewhere now?
I'm just going to say I'm going to go with Tua. He's at home. He was, you know, first start I was a little worried, but this past week he made some key throws. He is without a receiver, I think, Preston Williams this week due to a foot sprain of some sort, I believe. But he also can add some yards via the run, so I did. I looked at Lock. I do like Lock. Lock's on the road also, and then Tua's at home. That was the key deciding factor for me.
I actually did look at Tua as well. His price is a little bit – it's like $100 higher on DraftKings than Lock, but it's actually $300 cheaper on FanDuel. So if you're comparing the two, maybe consider Lock more so on DraftKings than Tua on FanDuel because of the price differential. But, yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you said about that. With Locke, the reason I decided to go back to the well with him, if you forget about the game in the Cyclone that Cleveland and Vegas played a couple weeks ago, Vegas has allowed 12 total touchdowns and 331 passing yards per game since week four. Over his last two games, Locke has put together six total touchdowns of his own. So numbers tend to say that Locke is starting to heat up a little bit. Obviously, he lost Albert Badunum to injury for the season now, so he's out. But he still has Noah Fant, who came back into the game after suffering what looked like it was going to be a serious injury early on Sunday. And Jerry Jeudy, like I said, looked very, very good. Tim Patrick is back healthy, providing a deep threat for him. KJ Hamler, the other rookie, has looked very, very good. Hamilton, I should say. Has looked pretty good, too, in the passing game. And he's got two running backs that can move the ball and catch the ball out of the backfield in Lindsey and Gordon.
Lindsey's so highly underrated. Yep, okay. You sold me. I don't have a problem with that. Trust me, I don't. But the over is in jeopardy at this point.
Okay. So, I mentioned earlier that I'm staying away from Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback.
Yes, this is our first match.
That's because I'm going to pay up for Aaron Jones versus Jacksonville on the ground.
Yes, we match.
Jacksonville is allowing 141 combo yards per game to opposing running backs. And Aaron Jones is coming off his first non-scoring week of the year, where he handled 20 touches despite not being 100%. So obviously, I mean, they could have given the ball to Dexter Williams. They could have given the ball to Tyler Irvin more, but they didn't. They still gave Jones 20 carries despite not being fully healthy. What are they going to do this week against Jacksonville? It's going to be a lot of Aaron Jones, probably a lot of Jamal Williams. It sounds like he's going to play this week. A lot of yards on the ground here this week against Jacksonville.
Yep, I think it's a no-brainer. Who are you staying away from? I think this is a pretty good no-brainer too.
I'm going to stay away from Alvin Kamara versus San Francisco.
Now we're rolling. Now we're cooking with fire.
7,900 on DraftKings, 8,900 on FanDuel. Kamara saved an otherwise crappy line yesterday with the touchdown run. He still only had 14 touches and 49 total yards in the game where New Orleans scored 38 points. I mean, it makes some sense with the return of both Emmanuel Sanders and Michael Thomas this past week. But, you know, San Francisco's only allowed 5 running back scores over their first 9 games this year, and they're barely giving up 100 total yards per game to opposing running backs. In Kamara's case, he's going to split some of those yards with Murray. So that is not the right play this week.
So we have 2 in a row. I do think we're going to break it here. I don't think we're going to get 3 in a row here because I couldn't decide. I was tied between 2 players. They happen to be teammates. So I'm going to go with the guy that I think is the safer play versus the guy that probably has slightly more upside if he does play.
And I think, I think we're going to match because I also was down to the situation where there's 2 players on the same team, one of which is a safer play and one of which has got a little bit more upside. And I decided to go with the guy with a little bit more upside.
That means we're not going to match because I went with the safer guy. I'm going with Malcolm Brown. That means you're going with Cam Akers.
No.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were going to say you're going with Antonio Gibson.
No.
And I'm going with J.D. McKissick.
Nope. That's called context, right? A little more to it. But, yeah, no, I like Malcolm Brown. I think he's got a great matchup at the price. I didn't see a lot of guys I really loved that were lower, cheaper this week at the running back position. Didn't even look at the Washington situation, honestly. Don't know why, just didn't. They're on the road in Detroit. Alex Smith is in now. I'm glad. Hopefully he stays healthy and safe and all that stuff. But maybe I overlooked the Washington backs a little bit.
Well, I do like the Malcolm Brown price. That's certainly not a problem there. With McKissick, after being completely thrashed by Minnesota, Detroit is now allowing a league-worst 187 combo yards per game to opposing running backs. That's worse than Carolina. That's worse than Vegas. Detroit is now the bottom of the barrel. And it wasn't just Delvin Cook. I mean, Amir Abdullah scored in a revenge game against them last week. We had Alexander Mattison get nearly 50 yards in mop-up duty. plus, Detroit, they've given up a league-worst 15 total touchdowns to the position, 8 of which have come over the last 3 weeks. Now, again, I like both Gibson and McKissick for this game, but McKissick just got 14 targets last week, most of which came after Alex Smith took over. So I decided to look back at the other game where Alex Smith played half the game in relief of Kyle Allen earlier this year, back in week 5. In that game, McKissick also led the team in targets, receptions, and receiving yards. So again, you got to like them both. McKissick is cheaper, though, and he's obviously the passing game preference for Alex Smith, even though I personally think that Antonio Gibson, I like Gibson. I think he's good in the passing game, too. But for whatever reason, Alex Smith likes throwing the ball to McKissick.
Yeah, that's why people should be listening, because that's the kind of nuggets and the information that you're going to get. And I could see you having talked me into McKissick over Brown now, but it does break our streak of 2 in a row.
Hey, here's the thought. Play both of them and then pay up big time for some studs at wide receiver, such as my pay-to-play, Michael Thomas versus San Francisco.
Okay, so we don't match there. Do you want to know what I wrote down for my pay-to-play?
Who did you write down?
I wrote no one. And then I went, well, I've got to give a name, right? Because it's only fair to give a name. So I said Stefon Diggs, and I still don't love that. Look, I'm not against Michael Thomas. I just don't love any of those guys in the top that are, let me see, what is it? Go down to, like,
well, let's look at.
To me, again,
we talked about Davante Adams possibly.
Yeah.
He'll score a touchdown. He'll get 100 yards, but, I mean, it's not going to be a pass forward game. His price is so high. DeAndre Hopkins is going to be matched up against Tre'Davious White. Not a great matchup.
Nope.
DK Metcalf is going to get Jalen Ramsey. Not a great matchup. Stephon Diggs is going to get Patrick Peterson. Not a great matchup.
No, that's why I said, like, and then you get down. Now you're getting down to the Keenan Allen. He's going to get Miami. Not a great matchup. I like Robert Woods over Cooper Kupp now, but we're sub $7,000, so it's like that's not paying up.
I totally agree.
So
that's why I settled on Michael Thomas in the same boat. I was just looking over; it's like none of these guys I really like. But Michael Thomas, you know, over their last six games, every single wide receiver one except for Jacoby Myers, and yes, Jacoby Myers was a wide receiver one the week that he faced New England. Every single wide receiver one except Myers has scored at least one touchdown. Myers in his game, he finished with a respectable four catches for 60 yards.
In the Patriots offense, that's like seven for 125 and two in somebody else's.
So over the last 2 weeks, DK Metcalf and Davante Adams have combined for 22 catches, 334 yards, and three touchdowns against this defense. Fellow superstar wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins topped 150 yards against them back in week one. Thomas has got his sea legs back under him now. We already told you to not play Alvin Kamara in this game because the addition of Thomas and Sanders, along with Marquez Callaway coming back too, they're getting healthy. They're getting all these other weapons around him. But we all know Breeze likes to throw it to Thomas, and it's in New Orleans. Oh, Thomas all day.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. The 5 for 51 this past week and only six targets, that concerns me too. Maybe that's why I just turned a blind eye to him this week.
Well, I was actually I just kept watching and watching, and everybody caught a touchdown pass except for him. I was like, what the heck? And Jerry Cook almost caught a touchdown pass and dropped the ball.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it was his first game back. We both actually had him as our stay away last week, if I remember right. Because of that particular reason, and because they didn't give us a discount for him.
Correct.
I would like to know. I think his price might actually be cheaper than last week. I'll have to do a little research to find that out. But $7,400 seems, I mean, that's $1,500 less than Davante Adams this week.
Yeah, that is true. Okay, I think we have a chance at matching at the stay away.
Well, he's actually a guy that you mentioned earlier. I'm going to stay away from Keenan Allen at Miami.
Man, the over has lost now. No, I'm staying away from DK Metcalf. I'm stacking my stayaways from quarterback and wide receiver. I love DK Metcalf, but bad matchup, and you never know which week he versus Tyler Lockett gets to blow up, and it seems like DK's got two in a row now, so I just feel like it could be a lukewarm week on top of that.
Oh, I totally agree with that. My only argument for Allen here, Stephon Diggs and Robert Woods are the only two wide receiver ones that have done anything at all against this Miami secondary all year. Miami's getting beaten by number two receivers, guys like Christian Kirk last week. They just shut down DeAndre Hopkins completely for 2.5 quarters yesterday. Plus, they're starting to become really sieve-like to opposing tight ends. So, I mean, if you want to be sneaky here, if you want to get some exposure to the Chargers offense against Miami, maybe consider using Hunter Henry at a reduced price this week, or even sneakily playing Donald Parham, who almost caught the game-winning touchdown last week. Those are guys to consider as a potential, although it's a lot of good values at tight end this week, I feel. But in particular, don't count on Keenan Allen to have a Keenan Allen game this week.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Like I told you, I wasn't paying up for anybody, right? So I stayed away from the guy that I felt just had a higher salary by a little bit. Let's see if we can match on a value play, which is really hard to do usually, right? We don't match often on value plays. I think we got a shot here.
Well, the value play this week, too, it's such a deep core group of wide receivers to choose from.
Yep.
So, again, finding that one obvious matchup. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about the Rams in Seattle. Well, pretty much everybody and their sister is going to be all over Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods coming off a bye against the Seattle defense. But the real value play this week is Josh Reynolds for nearly $3,000 cheaper than Cooper Kupp on both sites. Over the last 2 weeks, Reynolds has 17 targets, which I will admit, it's less than Cooper Kupp had in the last game when he had the 21 targets, which was ridiculous. But you know what? Right now, Reynolds has also scored in two of his last three games, and it's actually been the outside receivers against Seattle of late that have done the most damage. And Reynolds and Woods will end up on the outside, so Coop operates more in the slot.
So not opposed to that at all, especially since I have Josh Reynolds as a wide receiver three in a league. Yes, you heard me say that right. Josh Reynolds is a wide receiver three for me. That's what happens when you draft Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey in an auction. Okay. No, we didn't match. My value play is probably risky, but he's facing a team that's giving up the 10th most points to the fantasy wide receiver position. He has underperformed so far this year. Actually, I think he's been well outperformed by a free agent signing. I'm not paying up the price for Fulgham, although I almost made him my pay up, believe it or not. I think Jalen Reagor, coming off of a bye, having extra time to work, is a solid value play this week.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Fulgham. One of the reasons I really stuck away from him this week is because I assume that he'll get Bradbury in coverage, which is not a good matchup for him.
Not at all. Not the best at all. But yeah, I do. I have a feeling that we see Reagor have a big week.
I agree. Actually, the only reason I might have some concern about him is if Elshon does end up suiting up this week. We don't know yet, obviously, on that.
Yeah, I don't think Elshon's this week. I think he's a week away at least. And then he's been out for so long. I think that they definitely have him on a snap count, you know, to get his legs under him and stuff like that. Maybe some, maybe some red zone stuff, you know, and use him in spots that they can take advantage of his height and stuff like that.
No, otherwise, so I have no issue at all with Reagor. I actually really like Reagor going forward for both the rest of this year and also obviously into next season. He's obviously not going to win Rookie Wide Receiver of the Year due to the amount of time he missed. But when all things come and pass at the end of everything and history goes forward, he's going to be one of the top two or three wide receivers out of this class.
Yes, it's a shame that it got derailed by injury earlier in the year. But $4,200, so. That's $200 more than an injured Alan Lazard and an injured Alshon Jeffrey and, you know, Richie James. I'll tell you a guy I did almost pick, though, and it's the Odell Beckham replacement, Rashad Higgins.
Yes.
I think he's a solid play this week.
Well, and another guy I considered, I actually made the stupid mistake of playing the wrong Sims for Washington last week in a couple lineups. I stuck Steven Sims in there at the last minute to try to like maximize salary at other positions. And of course he did nothing until the fourth quarter and Cam Sims showed up and posted a 100-yard game for them. So I did screw up that one. I have to admit, just chose the wrong guy in that case, but I'm kind of looking a little bit at the bottom of the price list there. Mac Hollins, if Preston Williams doesn't play, for whatever reason, Tua Tagovailoa has had an issue with throwing the ball consistently to Devontae Parker in his first few games here. Now, some of that is because Devontae Parker has been matched up against an opponent's better cornerback than Preston Williams has. But with Williams likely out because of the foot injury sustained after the touchdown celebration last week, Mac Hollins stepped in. Hollins was actually targeted in the red zone, too, a couple times. And I think he would be an interesting play, again, at the absolute bottom price tag on DraftKings at $3,000, $4,800 on FanDuel, next to bottom pricing there, too.
There you go. So, look, this is one of the worst matching weeks we've ever had. We only have two right now. You said you thought that we would run the
table. I think we're going to sweep the tight end position
here. So, I have my doubts, but maybe that means we're just going to go 1-2-3, and that's the way it is. I do think that the stay away was rather easy.
Yes.
The pay up, again, then you've got the disparity with the salary and all that kind of stuff. Go ahead, lead us off. Tell us who you're paying up for.
Well, the disparity in salary was the exact reason why I chose TJ Hockenson versus Washington instead of Darren Waller at home against Denver. Both have good matchups, but you're going to spend $800 more on DraftKings for Waller. You're going to spend $800 more on FanDuel for Waller. So I'd rather save a little bit of money and get similar production. Washington has allowed the third most touchdowns to the tight end position. Meanwhile, Hockenson has scored and or topped 50 yards in every single game this year. That's consistency. Waller hasn't done that, and yet Waller's higher priced.
So we do match. We almost did not match, though. I had Waller written down, and then I scratched him for the same exact reason that you just said from a price standpoint. So if I'm going to pay up and I could save some bucks, I might as well do it.
And again, like I said, don't say that Waller's going to have a bad game. Waller's going to have a good game. It's a great matchup for him, too.
Yep.
But Hockenson, you're going to get similar production, a little bit more of a steady floor with Mr. Hockenson versus Waller. And you also don't have to worry about someone like Foster Moreau coming in and stealing the touchdown pass.
Very true. Very, very true.
Okay. We're going to match here at Stay Away, I'm pretty sure, too.
I don't know. I chose to stay away from Noah Fant.
Oh, we didn't match. Okay.
Who are you staying away from?
I'll stay away from Jared Cook.
That's who I thought you were going to say. For me, it came down to money again. You know, he's a little bit more money than Cook is. I just don't love that matchup, honestly. Let me see if I can find my notes here real quick. The Raiders are a – don't know. Yeah, they're like a bottom 12 matchup for tight ends this year. And that coupled with the money, that's why I decided to stay away from Fant. But I absolutely agree with you that I would be steering clear of Mr. Cook also.
I agree. I don't love Fant's matchup this week. I don't like the fact that he's probably going to be a little bit limited still by his injury from last week. But I think the fact that Albert Obunam is not going to be out there takes away that threat of a person stealing a touchdown from. Obviously, they still have Jake Butt. I believe they have Nick Vanette still there as possibilities to steal touchdowns. But again, I mean, it's Noah Fant. It's a good matchup for Drew Locke, not the best matchup for Fant. But I don't hate him here. But you're saving a few bucks to go to Cook on DraftKings, but you're actually spending more for Cook on FanDuel than Fant. And the return of Emmanuel Sanders and Michael Thomas last week cut into Jared Cook's targets and making his owners even more frustrated. Cook nearly had a touchdown, but he fumbled it.
Yep.
And then after that, both of his backups scored touchdowns. And come it was, on, man.
And it was a fumble. That knee was on an arm.
Yeah. San Francisco, they've allowed only two tight end scores all year. Opposing tight ends are averaging only 3.8 catches, only 36 yards per game against them. This is too much going on there right now. It's comical. I'm telling you to stay away from Kamara and Cook. And I'm paying up big money for Michael Thomas. What's this world coming to?
Yeah, I know. That's 2020 in a nutshell. So you mentioned injury, having some worries about stuff. Injury played a factor in who I'm paying up for as my value play. And I think that we're in the same spot. I have a question for you. Is Jordan Reed still healthy?
Was he ever?
Well, you know what I mean. Anyway.
So you're going to go with Ross Squally, I assume, right?
No, I'm going with Jordan Reed.
Okay.
We didn't match, right?
That is not who I went with. I seriously considered Ross Squally. Just because I think Reed was on a snap count last week. And I think he's going to be back and play more this week. So, but again, it's New Orleans secondary has not looked good all year. They particularly struggled against the tight end position.
Yep.
I have no problem with playing Jordan Reed. I feel a little safer with Dwelly, but the price tag, Reed is actually cheaper than Dwelly on DraftKings, the same price on FanDuel. So you really can't go wrong with either of them. In that same range right there, I also considered Robert Tonyan, who I thought if the weather becomes an issue in Green Bay, could be more involved in the passing game. And Jacksonville has been one of the worst in terms of yardage allowed to opposing tight ends this year. But ultimately, I settled on paying a little bit more for my value play than normal. And by paying a little bit more, I'm saying I'm paying $4,400, which is basically wide receiver 3 territory for my tight end. I'm going to take Eric Ebron versus Cincinnati.
I don't hate that, honestly. I look down the list way too cheap to even see him as my value play, honestly. But value comes in the form of points, right? So three times you're looking at 12 and change. Yeah, I think you easily get that with him.
Well, here's the crazy thing. So I knew that Cincinnati was bad against tight ends, but I did a sort really quickly on a stat site, and I determined that over the last 4 weeks, Cincinnati has allowed the most tight end receptions, the most tight end touchdowns, and only one team has allowed more yardage to opposing tight ends. This comes despite them having their bye during the last 4 weeks. Yeah. How is this physically possible? Ebron scored in back-to-back games, and he's now scored or topped 40 yards in all except for two games this year. So much like Hockenson, he's been fairly consistent. Vance McDonald likely not going to play this coming week. Not been much of anything all season. So I love Ebron versus Cincinnati. Again, a little bit higher than I normally like to pay for a tight end. But again, there's a lot of players to choose from this week, including, like you said, the two San Francisco options and Tanyan in Green Bay.
Yep. So, yes, the under hits, not the over. Three matches. Three matches this week. That's it. I really thought we were going to get out of the gate running five or six in a row. So,
well, and like I said, if you really want to be a budget squeezer at tight end, consider Donald Parham in that Chargers offense against Miami.
Yeah, that's always an option. Taysom Hill. You have Taysom Hill listed as a tight end because that's what they list him on.
Well, so here's the thing. The crazy thing between FanDuel and DraftKings. DraftKings lists Taysom Hill as a quarterback. And you're not going to play Taysom Hill as a quarterback ever.
No.
With the exception of maybe in a super flex type situation on FanBall. But not, you're certainly not going to do that on DraftKings. Taysom Hill, however, at 4,500, which is just above the roster minimum for a tight end on FanDuel, had his biggest game as far as from a pro standpoint this past week, throwing the ball successfully, catching passes, and running with the ball. So, again, that may have been the one game this year where he really blows up, but he has caught a few passes this year and a couple touchdowns. So, at 4,500, if you want to be a sneaky play, again, I told you not to play Jared Cook because San Francisco doesn't give up a lot of tight end touchdowns, but realistically, if Taysom Hill scores a touchdown, it might not be a tight end touchdown.
Right, exactly. Yes, Taysom Hill, fantasy killer. All right, well, it's been a good week, I think. So that's your show. Make sure that you follow Harley on Twitter, at Nuclear Harley. Follow me, at Steve Gallo NFL. Check all of our works and all the different things that we have tool-wise at thehuddle.com. Harley, again, my biggest, largest condolences on the loss of
as to you, Steve, as to you.
Thank you, appreciate that. And until next week, get Blitz for sponsoring. Cheers.